Yo, Chuck, run a power move on him.
Say something to you to give you a true knowledge of yourself and life, so that the same glory and success attained by other men who understand themselves may be yours. Man in the full knowledge of himself is a superb and supreme creature of creation. When man becomes possessor of the knowledge of himself, he becomes master of his environment, the captain of his own ship, the director of his own destiny, the accomplisher of his own ends.
So we're at the Brooklyn Combine. We have the usual suspects in the room. We'll do a quick roll call and then we'll introduce our fine guest, who's soon to be named. This is Phil, the main organizer and the origin of the black man.
Jesus Christ.
The first man.
Black Jesus Christ.
Phil Shum.
Black Jesus Christ. This is Jazz.
Peace. This is Brother Malik.
You good? This is Ken Montgomery. I'm here to make sure Phil stays straight and squared up.
Yes. And we have our esteemed guest.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Virgil M. Marcus. I'm the community director for the Borough of Brooklyn, advocating for all of Brooklyn on the Community Advocates and Development. We're located at 1396 St. John's Place between Utica's Connectedy. And if anyone wants to contact us, you know, they could reach me directly at 347-515-9282.
Oh, man, you just did something that most politicians don't. You put it all out there.
Because
be held accountable.
That's right. That's what it's all about. Transparency. You know, there's nothing to hide. You know, all people are literally suffering. We're dying, and if we don't do something and wake up, and something to wake our people up, we eventually might be extinct. And that's the direction that the Caucasians are moving to. They, since they came on the face of the earth, they've been trying to annihilate us, trying to get rid of us. But we are resilient people. We are the original people. We were here first, right? As a matter of fact, no land was given to the Caucasian.
Now, you say that because it's funny because Eurocentric thinking in history would have you believe that there was no other high civilizations. They weren't people of African descent. They weren't Asian. They weren't, you know, Aztecs. And I'd like, you know, I think about that often because it's almost like a pathological behavior in how Eurocentric or European way of thinking have commodified the world. Why do you think that is?
Because we were, or still is, the most loving, kind, and caring people on the face of the earth. We are God-fearing people. You know, the Creator knew what He was doing when He created us. And the Caucasian evolved. They evolved from a reptilian species. And they interbreed with...
I'm sorry.
I have to tell it like it is. Yep. They interbreed with the baboon. This is why, if you notice their structure, right? It's not like us. It's not of us. It's totally different. And they, when we found them, they were in the caves of the mountains, the Caucasus Mountains of Europe.
Now, for some people, because I've read about that extensively. You had the Teutrons and the Caucasus, you know. When you read a lot of academia, the thought, or there is some thinking that just was mythical stuff created by Caucasian Aryan people to put themselves at a higher place where that place really didn't exist at all.
No, it did exist. If you remember, they always come up with these images of half man, half beast.
Yeah, I've
and
seen
so
that.
Forth. And I could show you a picture right now of Caucasians having intercourse with pigs.
Yeah, were they?
And I could show you what came out of it, where there was the pigs give birth.
Wait.
To the Caucasian. I have the picture of it.
Jazz has a question.
You're saying that a human being was able to reproduce with an animal.
Yeah.
But you need the same amount of chromosomes to reproduce.
You have to remember that they're subhumans.
Okay. All right, so
there's humans and subhumans. We are the humans.
Here's the thing.
We have melanin.
I agree with there are differences. Sort of how we were just talking about the tiger. Mm-hmm. Based on where you are in the world, you get different features. But I think we're all human. I don't think there's a subhuman I think they're
over time after they interbred and so forth. This is how they came to be. That we would
they became more human like?
Yes, we deemed them. They these are people without soul. This is why they could commit so much heinous acts. This is why they could sleep with animals without any
recourse. I think you could talk to the heinous acts with still remaining consistent in the scientific stuff that Jazz is talking about concerning DNA and all that. Because you know what you're making me think of? You're making me think of Nell Painter's book, The History of White People. Mm-hmm. And she goes through the history of how whiteness was created. Like it's a false concept. Mm-hmm. And she talked about how there wasn't a lot of intellectual energy that went into creating this false concept. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that energy was these mythical things had come about half beast, half man, and you know there was pictures, and you're talking about Circassian and Georgians, and who was allowed to be considered white, who wasn't, how Greek to Rome to England, Anglo-Saxon, Italian, German, like how every bit of European decided to take part in constructing the narrative of what whiteness was in hopes of saying that they were the dominant man. Mm. Good, Jess.
I think like what you're saying, Dr. Marcus, it reminds me of white supremacists and them saying like they're the superior being and we're subhuman based off of our skull types and all of that was all junk
pseudoscience bullshit. Mm-hmm.
So on the flip side, I think it's the same way. I don't think we are some different species. I think we're all human, and the way their cultures have developed have separated them from. Mm-hmm. Asian cultures, African cultures, and even American cultures before it was discovered. And I put quotes around that, air quotes. Mm-hmm. So coming from a place, they have no relationship to nature per se because they're in this. You're in this really cold place up north.
Their relationship to the land
is
totally different from
everywhere
else in the world. And I honestly think when they saw them, all those fruits of the breadbasket of Africa, and people like these African kings and queens who was walking the earth, you know, Mansa Musa and the gold and the minerals, and they were not going back ever.
Yeah.
And their relationship to Earth is very unique in that it's a perfect example I give. I read a book about Tocqueville when he was on his ship coming to America from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was writing, he was keeping a journal about all the things he saw. He was writing it back to his parents. And he said, on that ship, it was other Europeans of different European descent, whatever, some Americans on the ship. And when they finally, they could tell some of the people who had took the journey up and prior knew that they were getting close to homeland because of the types of birds that were flying above them. And it's this one passage where he says it was this beautiful bird that one or two people had familiarized himself with, but it was just absolutely beautiful. And he talks about how beautiful it was. And then in the next passage, he talks about how they put that bird in a cage. So they went from looking at how beautiful something was to putting it in a cage. They created this system and this institution of racism and white supremacy to justify why they are the civilized. And they did that while they were sneaking in the back of the house having children with black women.
Or putting their child on a black woman's tit.
Raping a black man. So it was all this dishonest, fake intellectual, dialogue that helped create this system that for some reason everybody believed in. And this system turns into, we live in this society now where these things that they've created, everybody swears by them and nobody's willing to do anything.
And I don't even think oftentimes that the case is genuinely that these individuals actually believe in this as much as people go along to get along, especially if they're benefactors. I think Dr. Clark mentioned in a talk and comes to mind about the book, The Iceman Inheritance. And
yeah, that's a good book.
Yeah, it's a really good book.
Yeah.
And in that, we get an analysis of how and why what today's so-called white people, a framework for understanding the behavior. And it's from a very human perspective, you know. It sort of leaves a lot of the portions of the discussion that might otherwise be up for debate, it leaves them to the side.
Right.
And you get to deal with a purely biological understanding of, like you said, your relationship to the earth and its relationship to how you behave. You know, this is a fact. So if you, if you're hungry, if the, if you're coming from an environment, it's hard to get down to some soil that can help you, you know, reproduce in a meaningful way and, you know, be healthy in this fashion, you're going to have a different type of aggression than if you're in an environment where it's lush and you don't have to compete in the same fashion, so on and so forth. So we understand that. I think our position is one more of something a bit simpler in the sense that we lost, right? If you're on a planet where you have human beings fighting for resources,
we lost the fight.
We lost that fight. That's it, right? And now with that, if we go too far with analyzing the why, we want to be mindful not to turn white people, especially as considering this is a modern construct, but for the purposes of this conversation, turn white people into some sort of overlordian, super evil entity that then can't be overcome. Because that, for those of us that are doing what we can. I mean, and
I really didn't like that book, actually.
I didn't like the...
I did not like it. It was informative.
Aesthetically. I didn't like the read of it.
But,
you know, from an information standpoint, there are various ways of understanding our condition without necessarily bringing the Yakubs of the world into it. You know what I'm saying?
In actuality, I don't even call them white people because that's an oxymoron. They're Caucasians. Right, they're pale-skinned people. The scripture, even the Bible, the own Bible speaks about them, and it describes them as pale-skinned, not white people. Right, and black, as you know, reading Black's Law Dictionary, black have no standing. So that's why we don't say really say black, but just for identity purposes, we may say black so people could understand what we're talking about. But in actuality, it's copper-toned melanated. Right? That's who we are, copper-toned melanated people. You know, when you go to certain parts of the world and you talk about white, people look at you funny. You talk about black, people look at you funny. You know, they're like, you get that from? You know, they don't even say Negro. Take, for instance, they play with words and us. They would use African-American. American. Show me an African-American flag.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Show me a Negro flag. Show me a West Indian American flag.
I've never identified myself as
No, African-American. You know, so we have to start putting things in perspective and, you know, calling for what it is, speaking the truth. You know, many people don't like the truth. I said to a Jew-ish, which means ish means wants to be like, right? And I said to a Jew-ish man, I said, he wanted to join the conversation we were having. We were coming back from Albany and we were on the bus. And he said to me, he said, you mind if I say something? I said, no. I said, this is not your place. He said, no, I really wanted to say something. I said, well, in order for you to say anything, I would like for you to explain to this group here who you really are. Tell them who you are. He said, I've been listening to you and I understand. This is what I want to say. I said, well, go ahead. If you don't, I'm gonna tell it like it is. And he said, Dr. Marcus is right. We're not Jew. We are Jew-ish. We want to be like you. This is where the ish comes in.
He admitted that.
Yeah.
He said that.
Yes, he said, yes, we're Ashkenazis and Khazarians. Hmm. We're from different section of Europe. Right, there's the Ashkenazian section where the Caucasus Mountain really lies, and then there's the Khazarian section. That's the over on the Russian side, the mountains of Russia. Right, and he said, you know, we could go into a deep discussion about this, but it's true that yeah, we are not Jews. He said, but. You know, everyone say we're Jews just to go along, just to get along. I said, well, I wish these people would repeat what you say to others so people would get a clear understanding, right? You see, they're the only race of people, as we will put it, that came to steal, kill, and destroy. A little over 3,000 years ago, they came into existence. And ever since they came into existence, that's all they've been doing. They've been stealing, killing, and destroying. Everywhere they went, they've stealed, killed, and destroyed. Show me another race of people that went around this world, went around the earth, stealing, killing, and destroying, colonializing every way they touch, everything they touch. There's a village in Africa that they don't allow no pale-skinned person to go. They kill them. They refuse to let them in their village.
Quickly to add to that, you know, for those who might want to dig a bit more into like some of the theories, some of the ideas being shared, you can pull into a book like the 13th tribe.
Right. Yeah.
To sort of get an idea of not only ideologically where a lot of these concepts are coming from, but also to get some of the factual data that you can look into to investigate for yourself.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back real quick and continue our this terribly interesting conversation with Dr. Marcus.
Very African. Come and step in Brother's temple, see what's happening. You'll taste the bass flow coming from a zero. Tell me what a sissy know. Funk a lesson is a new flow. Stalking, walking in my big black boots. Living off the earth, eating herbs and fruits. The children await me by the mountain and the river. And gather round the fire for the scroll that I deliver. The speak of a house is from the sand to the sky. And devils ever doubt and want to measure how high. Your logic reveals you, your mind can't catch it. Dimensions of a god go far beyond brackets. Come
coming to my oven, devils, coming you burn. I can always feel vulture with the strength and black word. You're pissing me off because you swear you're higher level. Back to your cave, get yourself together. Chili and Magilla, chocolate and vanilla. How can polar bears swing on vines with the gorillas, please? Check your reasoning because there's something amiss. My home is a void, you're drowning in abyss. I teach you funk code and don't preach a rap rhyme. Harambe to the sun as the mortals ask time.
What time is it?
The funky lesson comes, the sundial speaks.
Grand verbalizer, what time is it?
The building of the strong are the lessons of the meek.
Grand verbalizer, what time is it?
My science is deep, my blackness is deep.
How deep?
Deep, deeper than Atlantis, deeper than the seafloor traveled by the mantis. Your copycats will never know, with you the funk will never flow, but that's another blow. Make your move, thief apprentice, I never step. I'm a tribal move, your master hasn't figured yet. Bring your weapons to my sword and shield. What's the higher level if your shit ain't real? My mystic magic, what you gonna do? Think before you step before the rebel, silly mortal you. I tried to warn you, but your mind won't catch. You're just cookies in my oven, if I wanna burn a bat, you just burn.
Vainglorious, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green with the key, sissy.
Like this, like that, and like that, like this. How dark is the world, how strong is a fist. Originals come from the sand and the sword to the concrete, fighting wars in the street. The day of outrage, history, another page. We lack the word of this, but now there is a brother Jay, the prince of warriors. Leading masses, stomping liver lip, punks playing asses. The damn sissies always stalk for the glory. Sissy bomb is coming, but that's another story. So many people forgot where they came. Disrespect religion, but the living is lame. Black watch, how you living? Blowing the Nile. Teach them in immortals, the chimes of a sundial. To the east, teaching gods to be what it was, what it is, and again shall be. What's my mind state if my state ain't black? But Moses, Malcolm, and Huey are back. And a voice to a many going verb to verb. Sit back and take heed, brother, you must learn. Swimming in the books, and the books ain't given. The scales of a black man weighs in the living.
Grand verbalizer, what time is it?
I dwell among the mortals, the time is in the verse.
Grand verbalizer, what time is it?
Positive nature, mortals call it curse.
Now we back. Now I want to just get some background, Dr. Marcus.
Yes.
Where were you born?
I was born in Guyana.
GT?
Yeah.
What part of
George,
it?
Georgetown, Guyana.
Georgetown?
Village called Aquiclo.
Well, when did you come to United States?
Well, I came to United States first in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back. I went to school. And then I finally came here back in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
My eldest brother, who did six tours to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Sponsor
six tours.
Yes,
to Vietnam?
Six tours to Vietnam. Sponsors. He came here back in the '50s, and matter of fact, when I was born, he came back. He came back from Vietnam and came home to our place of residence where my mother lived in the what we call the housing scheme. And
housing scheme.
Yeah. We call it the housing scheme. I was a little baby then, and he was so proud of me. So I was like his baby. Mm-hmm. You know, he took me under his wings, and every time he called my mother or he sent her a letter, he always mentioned me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said I was my little brother doing. As a matter of fact, when I was born, I was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother relayed to me that, oops. Yeah, I used to get injections in my mouth,
mm-hmm.
and what happened? My mother told me. She said, you know, she would leave this little boy at the edge of the bed,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't roll left nor right. And many doctors had given up on me. They thought that I wasn't going to make it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and here I am today. 60 years of age, I made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up, my father, who was a lawyer, my godfather was a lawyer. They took me under their wings.
They practiced in Guyana?
Yeah, my father practiced in Guyana, and he also practiced here just briefly. God rest the dead. My godfather, he was an international lawyer, Rex
mm-hmm.
McKay.
Mm-hmm.
He had owned Guy America Airlines also. But I decided to pursue after graduating from South Shore. I went to private school.
You went to South Shore?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, after practicing, after going to private school, you know, we went to South Shore and then off to college.
Where'd you go to college?
Syracuse and then Buffalo and then Georgia State. Mm-hmm. And then back to New York. And, you know, I've traveled around the country playing soccer. I got scholarship playing soccer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then after graduating from high school, I started to play with a team called New York Italians up in the Bronx. It was an international team. And the guy liked me, Manny, the Italian coach. He liked me and he said, you know what? You're going to be a good player. So, you know, I want you on my team. But before then I played, you know, soccer in Guyana. I played soccer here and I traveled to different states and play soccer.
What year did you come back to New York to go to school after finishing college? Like, I'm trying to get a sense of, for us, what was the environment like when we got back to New York?
Well, when I got back to New York, I was studying, I really went to school to study medicine, gynecological care. And it was only a 2-year scholarship that I got. And then I had to pay for school. And after I couldn't meet the requirements of paying, I came back and I started as a young boy, started working and doing part-time work in Wall Street. And then I got a job in a factory.
What year was it?
What year was it like?
This was in 1978, 79.
Mm.
Yeah,
so 79. New York was really...
It's a good time.
It's a lot going on in New York at that time.
Yeah.
For black people.
Oh, yeah.
That year was great.
Yeah.
78 was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and then meanwhile, I was working.
So, yeah, I did blackout.
Yeah. I remember the blackout.
I remember the blackout.
1977.
Yeah, I was four.
I remember that blackout. Yeah. That was something else.
You remember?
I remember.
Yeah.
You remember Phil?
Yeah. I really remember the residual effects of
dope. Oh yeah.
No, I remember the day
looting all the stores and
stuff. I remember being young near Broadway and thinking, man, this area is so, it looks like it could be so much better. I remember being a very young kid thinking this area could be so much better if people occupied these stores. Why are these stores
like
Exactly. Well,
I just remember everybody selling shit the next day.
Oh man. I grew up in Brownsville,
that's where I was at too.
Yeah, Pitkin. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it was a disaster. Yeah. East 98.
Mm-hmm. Even in Ocean Hill was a disaster.
Oh yeah.
Saratoga and all that was so
Saratoga was actually burnt out, more or less. Cause there were fires everywhere, you remember?
Did you have any white friends at that point?
Yeah. I had some white friends that...
Were you telling them their relatives was having sex with pigs and stuff?
They knew. As a matter of fact, I remember as a young boy going to work with a friend of mine, uncle named Norman mm-hmm. Crackwell. And he would teach us arts and crafts and stuff, you know. He used to do home improvement and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we went to work with him and he left us to go get materials. I wanted to use the bathroom. This was in Bay Ridge. Mm-hmm. And we had already tore up the downstairs, so you had to go upstairs to use the bathroom. And on my way up, the Caucasian woman was inside the room with a dog. Mm-hmm. And I shot up. I forgot I needed to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I ran out the house and I told Brian.
You seen a dog, baby? A human dog?
Nah. Nah. The dog was humping.
Oh.
And I ran out the house. You know, I was young then and I didn't want to get in trouble.
It's very traumatic.
That was the first time I've seen that. I didn't want to get in trouble. So I told Brian, my friend, I said, come on, we got to get out of here. We got to get out. He said, what happened? I said, come on, we're going to get in trouble. And we ran out and we went waited on the corner. So when his uncle came back,
he's supposed to take a picture, man.
That time we ain't had these things, man. We ain't had these things that time. And I told his uncle. So his uncle said, "Look, please don't go to any other part of the house." I said, "I wanted to use the bathroom." He said, "If you wanted to use something, go in the backyard." Right? And we hurry up and finish that basement. And I told his uncle, I said, "I ain't going to work with you no more." Yeah, because I was scared.
That's a wild story.
Yeah, I was super wild. I was scared.
And how old were you roughly at the time?
I was about
18, 19. Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's pretty wild. Yeah. So let me ask you, but back to the, you know, I love the history. So I love that. So were you reading at the time, like Van Sertima and all that?
Yes, read books from Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark and all them. You know, I remember he had a lecture at McGavers and we all were there.
How accessible were these giants, Chancellor Williams and all these people?
They were pretty accessible. We would go up to the National Black Theater to watch them.
That was in Harlem, right?
Yeah. Or sometime we would go right over here to the Slave Theater.
Slave?
Yeah. And we...
You know Dr. Phillips, the owner of the Slave Theater. When I left the DA's office years ago, some people had gotten together and they wanted to hire me to see if I could represent his estate because that's when... they were trying to take his property.
Well, to tell you the truth, anything that they do from here on out, mm-hmm. or I've been doing, it's illegal. Mm-hmm. I could pinpoint all the fraud in the case.
Mm-hmm. In Phillips, Dr. Phillips.
Yes.
Judge Phillips.
Yeah, Judge Phillips. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when...
it was Judge Pesci who was assigned some lawyers to his case. You know what, I'm gonna tell you what, and this is a fact. Years ago, some people show up in my office saying that they're trying to, Charles Hines and his administration were trying to destroy, maybe not destroy, but they were trying to take over and marginalize Judge Phillips because he had wanted to run for DA.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, they produced a tape. And on that tape was a DA from the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office. I believe his name was Steve Kramer, who was in Racist Bureau.
Yeah.
It was his voice, which I was familiar with from myself being a district attorney. It was his voice and Judge Phillips' voice where Steve Kramer is talking to Judge Phillips about, "Hey, so why do you want to, you know, you run? But, you know, running could be expensive." Mm-hmm. And all this other stuff. And Judge Phillips was responding back. And I do know they took tons of boxes and things from Judge Phillips' home.
Yeah.
And then soon thereafter, he was put into guardianship.
Well, he was responding as if he was interested.
Look, this ain't none of your business.
Got it.
Yeah, I'm running for DA. That's my right.
Yeah.
Got it.
And what he also was doing, he was taping that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And, very interesting. And it was always something.
To tell you the truth,
the Brooklyn Daily Eagle was interested in it, but they never really did anything.
And to tell you the truth, I think
that. And now the Slave Theater is what?
It's tore down.
Yeah.
What are they doing? Condos, maybe, or something?
No, the Jews are still trying to get the property. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to speak with the family and have them do a land.
Now, the family was all over the place.
As a matter of fact, they just opened up the, Slave Theater 2 on Nostrand Avenue?
On Nostrand, yeah.
And,
the spot with the Nima.
Yeah.
With the glass.
Yeah. And it's giant in there. It's beautiful.
But what's the programming that's coming out of it?
They have a lot of cultural programs and so forth that's coming out of there. Right now, I know there's a lot of Caucasian trying to ease their way in there. And you know, when they get in there, you know what they're trying to do, right? So, but
how did Caucasians successfully
you know, as Mally pointed out, they won the race for the resources. They commandeered the resources. How do they continue to do that? And how did they essentially, from a psychological standpoint for us, how did they root out Black nationalism, intellectualism, radicalism in such a degree that even Black people were afraid to touch those
things? It started in 1921. The bombing of Norman, Oklahoma. And
you're talking about Black Wall Street?
Black Wall Street. That's when the onslaught actually started. Right after
the Red Summers that came right.
What happened is that the divide and conquer method, it was already there, but they imposed it even more. And
you're talking about through what? Information systems and media and, you know.
Not even so
advertising much. That, you know, the birth of advertising.
Not even so much in the advertising and so forth. Because remember, we're the ones that used to control most of that market, advertising and so forth.
What way?
Because we had a lot of businesses.
Oh, we did. We definitely.
We had a lot of businesses and we would. We had the papers and so forth and the businesses would put their ads and so forth in the papers and they would advertise and say what they're gonna do and so forth and encouraging other Blacks to think, but the whites on the other side didn't like it.
We're gonna take a real quick break when we come back, Doctor. Yeah. So I wanna really get into it.
Master teachers now. Master teachers. don't let the song be master deep. Just tell us no
matter. I stay warm. So now, you were saying in around the 1920s is when they really started, well, you know, before that, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, they were really hammering that away as far as a psychological standpoint.
But you could certainly use that as like a vantage point for kind of starting in that, or because think about it, right before that, you got the East St. Louis riots. Right. Yeah. Now this is about to be Garvey on this one. So that's clearly a lot of indication
definitely,
time period.
Definitely. Right. Go ahead. Yeah. If you want to even go back further, let's start with 1864.
That was right around before emancipation.
Well, it wasn't even emancipation.
I'm just saying the words that people would be familiar with. But
right,
you know,
but then remember we had a treaty that was right before, 10 years before they. Their country went into bankruptcy.
Yes, Right? America was definitely broke from the wars and the cowboy culture that they were dealing with. And, you know, all these other European nations, you know, impacting their economics and, you know, but what was happening though, which I think they were really perceptive about, was industrialization was happening in the Western world as a result of our black bodies.
Right.
It was a, the real world bubble. Everybody was, it happened up in Europe too, in England in particular, but everybody was building railroads at insane rates.
Right.
And I think the guy who was, it was some insane railroad, he needed like $100 million and he couldn't get it back.
Right.
The stock market
started in
The crash of the stock market was right around
it was the
time.
First. It was
the
first.
Well, 1920, not in the 1920s.
Yeah. No, there was one in the 1800s.
There was one in the 1800s.
That's true. They give it a different name, but it was the Great Depression, and then the one we know.
Well, the Great Depression, the real Great Depression, it was two. The first one in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was in 1933, and that's when they really came up with this, with the leveraging of the birth certificates. Then they implement the Social Security card in 1936.
Yeah, and all along that time also was America was really forming through the census. It was informing itself as to its political and immigration policies, which weren't really, you know, it wasn't really squared away yet.
No. And as a matter of fact, Marcus Garvey was the very first person to ever be deported, you know, from America. And I remember him saying in one of his speech when they tried to arrest him, he said, "How can you deport me from my own land?" Right? Which, and he was trying to tell them that this is our land, not yours. You don't belong here, right? Which is a fact, because if you go back into the Treaty of 1776, you'll see the Caucasian should have only been doing commerce and trade here, and that's it.
Well, but you know what? And really quickly to add to that point, when we think about Garvey during that time period, we also know that he was a pioneer in what we might call today modern advertising.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, what would they send him away for? For producing imagery of something that would be sold later, which is a complete standard and staple in the freaking modern world of advertising.
Right.
So,
I mean, even I think, you know, what's a... what's a disservice to black people in this country is that they are not educated as to the Marcus Garvey movement, to be quite honest. It was one of the most incredible movements, but what happens also is when you don't know about Garvey, you're also people like Hubert Harrison and all these other figures.
Yeah.
You're obscure. They're in the obscurity.
Right.
You have no idea. If you think it was just Garvey, you're so
You're missing the point about what was happening at that time amongst your people.
Black people.
Right. Because remember, I think it was Jay Goober at that time.
Who they say was
O.J. Epps.
Supposedly, supposedly black, actually. You hear people say, I don't know whether that's true or not.
Some of this stuff.
It's all, but you know what? That's what happens when you're in this, you put in this predicament. But Garvey was incredible. What he was able to do.
Yeah, it was a massive.
The time that he was in was also incredible.
Yeah, it was very incredible. You know.
But he had, you know, it was like, he had some really devilish people who looked like him around him at the time.
Well, what was happening at that time, they would get the weak brothers and sisters, and they would give them cars, they would give them
stuff,
things, and put them to infiltrate and bring back information to them.
Much like they do now?
Exactly. Yeah, just like like what they're doing now, right? And, you know, like you said, give a black man a nickel and he bring you a house, right? Give a black man a nickel, he bring you a house. And you don't even have to buy him coffee.
Do you see any similarities in that concept when you look at today from anything from the Oprah Winfreys of the world or the Jay-Z's or the Beyoncé's or any of these black celebrities, the Kanye's who are put in the Steve Stouts, they're put in these positions that seem like that is the position that we should all be aspiring to. And their position seems to be not a independent, self-determining position, but a position or a liaison to the black community with the superstructure.
You see, what they don't show you is what goes on behind the scene, because all of these people are being controlled. Mm-hmm. They're being controlled by the so-called Jewish establishments.
I just think it's white establishment.
Well, they're pale skinned. Yeah. They're not Jews. They're half a 90% of them are Germans.
Who are we talking about?
In this case, he's talking about Ashkenazi.
Okay. The Ashkenazis.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and if you notice that every time we form an organization or one of us rise up to prominency, if they can't control you, they kill you.
Who you think is right now, on a prominent level, someone who speaks of intelligence, action, and black nationalism, 2018.
In 2018?
It doesn't have to just be here in America. It could be anywhere in the diaspora. The guy Julius.
From Africa.
Africa.
Yeah. I was just listening to him just the other day, and
where is he from? South Africa. Wasn't he in part of ANC or something at one point? I'm not sure.
I think so. Uh-huh. I think so. But he was calling for unity among us around the world, in and outside of the diaspora, wherever we are, to unite, because you see, there's no reason why we have the resources within our grasp.
But listen, the breadbasket of the world is still Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And from a modern standpoint, when you're talking about modernity, the Black American story and narrative is the biggest marketing asset tool you can ever. We set trends of you know, that people can't imagine.
Yeah. And still are setting trends.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we don't control our trend setting.
No. You
know? We're being sold what we think our trends are.
Right. Mm-hmm. Look at our young men and women today.
It's kind of sad.
It's very, very sad. They don't even know who they are anymore. You know, they're putting on the fake eyelashes.
Yeah.
Putting on the fake hair. And now they got all the different colors.
Yeah. Now I was on the train this week taking my class at Brooklyn College to the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting next to two young black girls, beautiful young black girls. Outside of their mouth, you know what the things that they were saying? Yo, boy, yo, suck my dick. Yo, bitch, pussy, yo, nigga, and it was no chill.
No, I, as a matter of fact,
it was no chill.
There was I was crossing over on Atlantic and Utica Avenue, and this young lady was on the phone with someone, and whoever she was on the phone with, she was mad at them, and she's a dyke. And she was telling,
that's not PC.
No, well, Dr. Marcus. No, you know, I'm saying,
she was a homosexual woman.
Listen, you got it. I hate to try to clean up some of this. I don't mince what you call it for what it is. All just right. Like they all of a sudden they want to call it gay, right? Gay means happiness. Which one of them are happy?
They may be happy.
Not one of them.
My thing is, I don't care who you sleep with.
No.
But I am about the black family.
No, but you see,
sleep with who?
I'm gonna live and die by my black brothers and sisters, right? I watch the culture of the Europeans who are indoctrinating our young babies into homosexualities. And things like that.
See,
because they're promoting it even in the schools.
Well, I think it's wild to take this stance that there were no homosexuals in.
Yeah, homosexuals been on this planet.
I'm saying to take the stance that there were no homosexuals in this time in Africa.
Or in Africa.
Okay,
it would be.
Could I say this?
Of course.
Could I say this because. When I say something, I can back it up. I can show you videos upon videos of our tribes in Africa and in South America. Right. Well, this is all Africa anyway. But in Africa, throughout, I can show you tribes upon tribes. They walk around. The women walk around topless, right? The children walk around naked. Nobody's raping them. Nobody's molesting them. And there's no homosexualities going on.
So what does that mean for James Baldwin of the world? Or Rust? Well, they say Rusted was...
But I want to submit something real quick before we go too far, and I got to dip, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I think that, as we always say, it's important for us to have these conversations, especially when it's cross-generational with the elders. With all due respect, we're definitely not going to agree on everything, but I also think it's important to note that that should not be a prerequisite, you know what I'm saying, for progress.
Mm-hmm.
We need these ideas to be challenged, and we need to find where do we agree so that we can make advancements, not to, you know, be in a choir or some sort of scenario like that. But please, let's continue.
With me, listen, people gonna, in this day and age, and the society we're living in, people are going to be who they want to be. But I'm saying, don't push your way of life upon my children. They're the most vulnerable ones. Let them grow up and then decide.
Figure it out themselves.
Right.
Oh, certainly.
But when you're going to take it into our schools, and then you're going to tell...
How they teach
them. Do you feel that same way for heterosexuality? Like, Do you feel that heterosexuality should not be pushed as normative to young people
as well? Should not.
Okay.
Listen, all right. A wrong is a wrong and a right is a right. Two wrongs don't make a right and two rights don't make a wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right.
So you agree that homosexuality and heterosexuality shouldn't be pushed on?
Should not be pushed.
So neither one. Humanity.
Yeah.
Loving whoever you
are. What should be pushed, like he said, is humanity.
Yeah. Okay.
I have nothing against people for what you choose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't force it upon me.
I don't like the guy who's over the top telling you about every conquest. Yes, it's like, come on, man. Keep that to yourself.
That's your business. Keep that to yourself.
Listen, I have to represent everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who
How
you are.
How your white constituents feel, which you represent?
They feel good because I speak.
If you can speak up for them,
I speak up for them. I speak truth to existence because what it is that I let them know straight up. I don't care who you are, what you are, where you're from, or what you do.
He is history and he is facts.
Right, okay. And when I go to represent someone, right, I don't look at who they are or what they are, what color or nothing. Mm-hmm. I go to do a job for them, mm-hmm. and I do the job to the best of my ability to get remedy. It's about getting remedy, and I'm not gonna force my will upon anyone. Anybody. You know, I'm gonna go out there, whether you white, black, blue, purple, pink. I'm going to tell you when you're wrong and when you're right.
But you understand also the history. And yo, we're going to come back. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back.
Because I definitely want to touch base before we bounce on some of the elders. But Well, like really quickly, I think one, when we talk about some of the distinctions that we're making here, and those of us who are in this, oh, we good? We good on time? Oh, okay. Those of us that are involved in a lot of the struggles that we are involved in trying to create social change, in our space, the sort of Black nationalist space, you do have divergent thoughts, but you have a serious convergence on what really matters, right? Like you take a historical actor like Dr. Clark versus like a Dr. Ben. Mm. On a vast majority of points, they'll be lock and step. And on some, it's like a serious, like we're like, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. And both
like a Umar Johnson and
sure.
But sure. I don't know. Those guys seem like celebrities in me now.
No, Umar Johnson is real to the core.
Yeah. I haven't met.
But I don't want to bring a lot of the contemporaries in for the moment. But I'm with you. And nothing against those cats, nothing against Seti, any of those guys. But the point is,
I seen him doing some berserk shit though. Umar Johnson.
Well, yeah. Well, and again, but that's precisely why I say let's bring it back. Like we fortunately got a chance to meet Dr. Ben.
Nigga that.
Remember?
Yeah.
We got a chance to meet Dr. Ben, and that was beautiful. I didn't get a chance to meet Dr. Clark personally ever, but when he passed, I was invited to be one of the artists to create a commemorative piece by the Coalition of 100 Black Women that Essence sponsored. It was a beautiful thing, but that was my introduction. I was like 19, changed the trajectory of my life. And it's I think I would love to talk a bit about some of your history with some of those brothers during that time, because even when we met Dr. Ben, you know, his better years were behind him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know.
You might've been there that day. It was in the nursing home. Dr. Jeffries was there.
Yeah, I think I was there with them in the nursing home. But let me say this. Dr. Ben, he was one that never minced words.
Mm-hmm.
Period. He never minced words. And he don't stand for bullcrap.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to tell it like it is. And if he's going to teach you something, he wants you to pay attention.
No, I know tons of people he's influenced.
Yeah, he don't want you to just hear him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He said the only way he could keep something is by giving it away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He said if he don't share his knowledge and give you the knowledge that he have incurred in his life, right? You don't need to be around him if you can't give it to him.
Well, he's tapping into what I think is a very humane thing, which is our purpose on this earth would be totally pointless if we don't pass the baton down to some people behind us. Just like you take your time out on a Saturday afternoon to come check with some brothers, some younger brothers, and share your knowledge and your information and really commune. What's your point of your humanity if you're not doing that? And then somebody like Dr. Clark, to me, what was impressive about him was he was excited about his scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Like he actually was into scholarship.
Right. He sure was, because, you know, he went to so many different universities and so forth and acquired so much. You know, that I think his aim was like to put it out there and hope that
somebody,
the young people, would want to follow in his footsteps and do the things that he did. That's why he used to take a lot of the young people on the different tours and so forth, right? So that they would get that experience.
And I know people who he directly impacted. Yeah. And they are still impacting people's lives.
That's right. You know, on to this day.
To this day.
Yeah, on to this day.
We may not know, and it may not be popular. Mm-hmm. But what, you know, for me, what's concerning as someone who, I'm not an old man, I'm not a young man. I'm just, I guess I would be what we call a Western culture, middle-aged man at this point in my life, but the Eurocentric guy, call it. But what's really disheartening for me is that generations upon generations, you know, thousands of us are not in tune with African tradition or history or nationalism.
Because it was taken out of us.
It was taken out of us. Like, people don't know who David Walker is.
No.
Or Hosea Eaton or Ida B. Wells. Like, right. Fannie Lou Hamer. This is not that far back.
We had a scenario where we were in my living room one day, and Wesley was in the house, and it was him and his friends. They had like a little sleepover. They might have been 14, 15 at the time.
And on my wall, I had, you know, a bunch of pictures of some elders. And I mean, this is, it's an embarrassing story. I probably shouldn't have called his name out, but it is out there.
Yeah, wasn't you hearing this, man? Yeah. Up on your scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's up on it now, I hope, at least more than he was then. But anyway, on a wall, it was, you know, a bunch of elders. Some I would expect them not to know, because that's what you mix it up, right? But then you got some basics. It was a picture of Malcolm. Not only was it a picture of Malcolm, it was almost a picture of Malcolm that was like for t-shirt and ball cap. Yeah. Like this is like a universal type image.
It was him at the window with the gun.
I mean, you know what I mean? But he's up on a wall, and five young men, New York public school system, whatever. They looked at that wall, and they, for the life of them, debated amongst themselves as to who that was. And their collective knowledge was Jay-Z.
What?
Because he had a suit on. Now, here's what's interesting. I'm going to put a pin in that, too, and jump back to my childhood. But I drew a picture, so everybody know I was a young illustrator. So I had drew a really detailed, pretty true-to-life illustration of that same image. I was at Camden Middle. No, Myrtle. We had moved to Irvington from Newark. Myrtle Avenue School, so they're going through my portfolio. One of the women in the office said, "What a beautiful white lady. What a beautiful picture of Dr. King. You're a really talented illustrator." So here's an adult white woman. Fast forward back to Wesley and them. So they look up, and it really hurt my heart. Like, it really did, because I couldn't get to some of these other, like you're mentioning, some of these other actors that may not be as immediate to them. But generationally, there's only a few years between Wesley and I. I went to Harriet Tubman School. My breakfast program was started by the Panthers. We had a red, black, and green. I say it all the time. We had a red, black, and green flag in the daggone school. You walking down the halls, it was a normative part of your reality to be exposed to your people. It was nothing of interest. And to have pretty much, like, in one or two generations, for it to be
out of the lexicon of information, historical information, all that. That's that. Now it's making me think of what you said, which is the original purpose was genocide, and to wipe us out. And when you sit and think that a group of people cannot be wiped out in this world, you're not being honest. You're intellectually honest. It's been done. We think of Native Americans, but it's been done more than all
types. Think about the Aboriginals in Australia.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
Think about the tribes in Argentina. Argentina look like Europe right now.
Listen, Samoans, Fijis, Brazilians. The Dole family, along with Woodrow Wilson and these guys, the Roosevelts, they freaking wiped people out.
Yeah.
And we are in this wild space. I think it goes to our one thing that black people, and I say, I know you have a problem with the term, but people with our pigment are good at. We're good at surviving.
Adaptability. And that is the survival.
That's what we, despite the neurosis and the mental health issues that come with it, with the black guys who talk like this and they think they're gonna do that, and or the opposite side, yo, nigga, I'll fucking kill you. Like, somehow we have the ability to adapt, which is unique.
When 100 years from now, whenever, when this thing changes and it's something else.
I don't think it's gonna be 100 either, Jazz.
When they're looking back,
lifetime.
The level of behavior modification that is like been imposed or it's come out of black people, I guess actually now the world is insane.
Yeah.
Like you just said, you got the spade, super spade, and then you got
the super goon
guy. It's like,
let's ask them quick. Let me break your wisdom.
I just want to say, and you said it earlier, Mally, we lost. This is just,
we're watching the proceeds of losing.
I'll add this point. I think it's important, and I always at least try to do this, and this is something that I picked up from Dr. Clark when I was much younger, is really trying to go to the history. And of course, he would pick it up from Dr. Schomburg, like going to the history. And then Malcolm would pick it up much later and look around the world so that you don't, A, turn yourselves into some sort of permanent special kind of victim. Look around the world. Like, look at the Japanese.
Yeah.
We can see right there an easy example. So we are not the only, and we can go on and on with other examples. We are not the only people to be oppressed. And in the face of that oppression, you develop some sort of version where you become like them in order to make sense of the world in your head. So now the brother who's on the corner, like, nigga, I'm a goon. I ain't only a goon, I'm a super goon. No, I'm a monster goon. I'll do anything. It's like, listen, stop for a second. Yeah. You have not taken millions of human beings from one landmass to another. You haven't done anything like that.
None of that.
So with that being said, you personally may be.
You ain't boil nobody's skin.
Yeah, you're not that. Now, it doesn't mean you're not capable of that.
But you ain't that.
You're not capable of that. But at least historically, up until all the people that fell out of crotches until you got here, history has proven, at least, that it ain't on your side in that debate.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So, but again, we're not unique in that effort to try to make sense of our place in the world by lashing out. And in a lot of ways, that's what we're doing. But my position is always very much from a human perspective, not from a... Even when we say blackness, I accept the term blackness in the same way that I accept if some uninformed cat in the streets calling me nigga, I'm more concerned with what does he mean when he say it. Right. There's somebody who might call me African and stab me in the back.
Yeah, absolutely. And language, language, different words mean different meanings to whoever you are.
I'm much more concerned with what do you mean when you say it.
They definitely play with words.
Yes, yes, definitely. There's been a mastery of playing with words. Yeah. Europeans have, and with conduct as well. What I'm gonna tell you what bothers me as, and it's something I probably think about every day of my life. It boggles my mind when you think about the efforts that have been made to marginalize blackness, Africanness, and when I think about it, I'm left with nothing to think about other than the only way that this thing can change is us to stop fucking with Eurocentric concepts and ideas and innovate our own, or something happening benign or cataclysmic because everyone, Dr. Marcus, believes in this. Listen, I go to the courts every single day. I've been in privy to things, and I think people get comfortable and perhaps fooled by some of the things I'm able to articulate and how they think or perceive who I am as a person, and they miss that I'm someone who is at the door every day and really seeing how not only these people think, but our own people think.
Right.
And it's not a pretty picture.
It's not. And I'm just like you. I'm at the doors every day. Mm-hmm. You see me in the courts.
Yes, absolutely.
And so forth. And it's very troubling. Look, I just had a kind of, you know, snarl with Judge Wade.
Judge who?
Wade.
Okay.
Carolyn Wade.
Mm-hmm. I've been part of an interview process being a member of the Kings County Judicial Screening Committee.
And I stepped in, we was supposed to have a hearing with her, and I'm representing a family who one of the sisters illegally transferred the property over to into her name, and we went and we happened to get it transferred back, even because it was done illegally, and we legally transferred it back.
Which happens a lot.
Right. And we showed up in housing court because the sister was trying to kick the family out of the property when they called me, and I said no. And I looked at the documents, pulled up all the fraud. She admitted that she committed fraud, perjury, and everything. And and I said, okay, so I went to housing court to stop the eviction and everything, which
it's almost like a kangaroo court.
Yeah, it is a kangaroo court. And, you know, like I always say, we don't have no real courts per se since 1913 because we don't have a republic. We do not have a republic since 1930.
This is definitely and not a good representation of a democratic republic.
No, it's definitely not.
Oh, what, America?
Yeah, America. Yeah.
Well, the United States of America is only 10 by 10 square miles, which is Washington, D.C.
Okay.
It is.
Okay.
And I could show you the documents that, you know.
But what's your experience in dealing with Judge Wade?
And, well, I remember when Judge Wade was running to get on the bench. I remember a couple of folks brought some flyers to me and asked me if I could help her, like I did with Judge Dana Douglas and Judge Ash.
Judge Dana Douglas is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Sean Diaz is another good friend of mine.
Beautiful young lady, you know, beautiful family. I love
Beth Douglas, Joe Alexis, I love the whole family.
And you know me, I'm down to earth.
Who bought you those flyers? Tahaka Robinson?
Yeah. You know. And asked me to support Judge, I said, okay. I looked at the slate and I said, you know, definitely I ain't going with these white folks. And I grabbed the flyers and being that I have voting blocks and I put people out on the polls every year, every time election come around, and I got my guys and said, look, you're gonna put her with these flyers and let everyone know that they're on my ticket. And Judge Wade got on the bench, right? And I walked into a court. It happened so that the court...
The clerk, law clerk? Law
no,
clerk?
Not, no, the court... Officer? I don't want to even call him officer because we didn't appoint him to no damn office. But anyway, he said, come on in. So we went in and sat down. She had a hearing going on that preceded us. And when she saw me, she knew that there was problems. The young lady who actually forged the signatures and everything, forged the deed and everything, came in, and Judge Wade realized what was going on. So she didn't want to deal with the case no more. But all she had to do was send a clerk out and tell us, look, she's not going to
Here's the thing, Dr. Marcus, and I don't know her personally. I've only met her a bunch of different times through people who have introduced me to her and through my participation in the judicial screening
committee. Right.
But here's the thing, outside of her, I don't know her personally. Italians couldn't be white, they got to be white. Jewish couldn't be white, they got to be white. Irish, everybody who, Armenian, you name it, they got their chance to be white. Asians. Asians did it in a unique way though.
Very unique way.
Because their uniqueness to me was that they only fuck with shit to a certain limit. But they were introverted into building their own paradigm from within and pulling what they needed, whatever. But they also were, some of them imprisoned in their own country as citizens here, but.
And citizenship is a fraud anyway.
But blackness here is, what do you do to get that? You create, or what you think, an ideology that you need to create because this superstructure respects that, or you think it respects that. So a lot of lawyers, a lot of designers, a lot of professionals, a lot of barristers, a lot of whoever, who are of this pigment, when they get those things that they need, those things are used to barter into acceptance. There's many...
And that's true.
So it's lawyers who get in, or people who go to law school and pass the bar. And some of us who get a skill set, those of us who seem to be unique and special and intellectual and have this skill set, the presumption is... we're going to take that skill set and cash it in at some point, because this superstructure is like, what else are you going to do with that? And I'm not saying that about her as a judge, but many, when they get there, they take on the
Eurocentric structure.
Structure, yes.
But it is not articulated as that. It's articulated as this normative structure. Yeah. Because to be white is to be normal.
Normal. Yeah. All right, so on that,
we know each other through different people and things, and we've had, I think, real genuine conversations. Yeah. We respect who you are and what you're doing, and I know you out here still putting in work. You're still a young man, actually.
Yeah.
You, know, you ain't 21, but you know, you're young.
Usa, I'm 21.
Yeah.
No, I ain't even 21. But I was born in the leap year.
But listen, what do you need us to know, and what do you need the young people to know as we going forward?
First of all, I would like for you to know that there are people out there who are still struggling to make ends meet and would love to find people like yourself, me, Jazz, and others to, you know, who would motivate them to actually come to the point where they have the understanding as to why they're standing up. They need to stand up. The young people are watching us. And for the young people, knowledge is key to freedom. And if you think that you can get by without seeking the knowledge from your elders, you're not going to get anywhere. Because right now, they took our curriculum or history or our story out of the schools. It's not in there. It's not being taught. They're not even teaching us economics. We're the creators of economics. And they're not even teaching it to our children. We have to do it for ourselves.
Our children are inundated with entertainment.
Entertainment. And we have to break them away from that. You know, mothers and fathers have to start being parents. Mm. It's a difference.
What do we do when we see that those mothers and fathers may not have Dr. Marcus in their life or other people to assist in compensating when the family structure falls apart? What can we do to create those social, familial, community systems and institutions to set the cultural and academic and intellectual standard in the community? And if anything, they are a corroborating effect to the parents who get it, or in the worst case scenarios, the kids who don't have the parents, who the parents have been killed in this war, they can be attracted to that.
Well,
who do we speak to? These politicians? How do we?
No. You know? Each one teach one.
Okay.
And as you walk the streets and you encounter these young people, say a positive word to them. Let them know that if they don't respect themselves, they're not going to respect anyone. And if they want respect in life, they have to respect themselves before people start respecting them. I looked at what I do, you know, as the leader in our community. I set the tone by reaching out to the youths. I go into the schools. I advise others to do so. Rather than sitting in front of the idiot box talking about you watching Hollywood Housewives and all that crap, you know, engage the young people. Don't be afraid to speak to them. They're looking for us to speak to them. They're looking for someone to reach out to. Remember, we were once there. We were young like these young people.
I'm still young.
Huh? Says who?
He's a young
man. You're the oldest in this group, man. Stop. You need to stop. You know, I love you, Jazz.
I love you.
You know, it's good to see you are here and you're an inspiration to these young people. It's just that you have to start engaging with them a little bit more. You know, start reaching out to them. Form conversation with them. Break the ice. Hey, what's up, my leader? How you doing? You know, things like that will get them going because they thrive on this ego. And when you say, "What's up, my leader?" Guess what? They feel that.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that sense of responsibility, sense of power, and they say, I'm doing good, man. And this is how I break the ice with them. You know, I change lives by communicating with them in that way. And for the young people that I've mentored, they're doing the same thing and they're changing lives. So if we could keep doing that, we would, over time, yeah, change our community, change the
narrative
and directions in our community. So we could do it.
With that, Dr. Marcus, I'd like to say thank you for your time, your intellect, your perspective, and your commitment to your people.
Yeah, well, it's not over. We have a lot to talk about.
We in sync.
Yeah, and I'm saying I hope we could do this again soon I tell you what, we have a crisis going on in our community where our people, how homes are being
stolen. Oh, we need to have that. Yes. Real quick, we want to thank our audience. This is the end, but listen, for those of you who don't know, someone we went to college with, actually.
Paul Saunders.
Beautiful family. They tried to take their home through this new program that's going on through City Hall where they're taking homeowners' homes. We definitely gonna have a follow up with that.
Definitely, because I do have the remedy to stop anyone from losing their home.
Then we need to have that soon.
Real soon.
All right.
You know, our people need to
black people
stop paying these barristers a whole lot of money.
Yeah, unless they do the job.
They're not gonna do the job.
I'm a good barrister. I'm a criminal barrister.
No, you're not. Listen, you're not even a barrister. Stop. You're true to your word.
Dancing at any session, rock up the woman and rock up the man. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, T-Tato, we beat them all in a row. Donkey want water, but you hold him, Joe. T-Tato, we beat them all in a row. The cost want water, but hold him, Joe. Ring the alarm. Another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm. Another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, four big sound in a one big lawn. The dance on a play, the other three keep calm. Four big sound in a one big lawn. The boom sound a play, the other three keep calm. Ring the alarm. Another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, remember this sound, it's a talk of the town. Talk of the country, hey. Rock Miss Charlie, rock Miss Munchie. Talk of the country, so ring the alarm. Another sound is dying. I know. Ring the alarm. Another sound is suffering. Whoa, hey. Watch the sound man a timber. Watch the sound man a pray. Watch the sound man a timber. Watch the sound man a pray. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. I know. Ring the alarm, another sound is suffering. Whoa, hey, a little of this sound, a little of that. Rock is the common, rock is the fat. Rock the white, and rock up the black. Sweet reggae music gone, pandy attack, yes. Pandy attack it gone, pandy attack. Sweet reggae music gone, straight non-stop. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm. Another sound is suffering. Whoa, hey, some sound sound like a big jump on. Listen to this sound, it's a champion. Run the dance in any session. Rock the woman and move up the man. Ring the alarm. Another sound is suffering. Whoa, hey. Ring the alarm. Another sound is dying. Whoa, hey. Be them mayor.
there and we beat them there. We beat them all over this atmosphere. Champion song, we just don't.